This is Radio Times. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen. The start of the new fiscal year this weekend means that governments across the country are scrambling to approve new budgets, and that's certainly true here in Philadelphia. Yesterday, City Council approved a $3.6 billion budget, and it hasn't been an easy few weeks or months. That's mostly because of Mayor Michael Nutter's new property tax assessment called AVI that would have changed the taxes that property owners paid. I said would have because council voted to deal with the initiative at some future date. Everyone agrees that the current system is outdated and in need of reform. There wasn't agreement on how to go forward. This was also Daryl Clark's first session as president of Philadelphia City Council, which has six new members voted in last fall. We have three people who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studios, and each of them covers city government for some version of WHYY. Dave Davies is senior reporter for WHYY, writes the off-mic blog at WHYY's online home for news. That's newsworks.org. He's also a contributor, fill-in host for Fresh Air with Terry Gross. And Dave, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good to be back, Marty.
Also with us, a new voice here at WHYY, or at least for Radio Times, is Holly Otterbein. She's a staff writer for It's Our Money, and that's a project, a partnership between the Philadelphia Daily News and WHYY. And Holly, nice to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. And also with us, rounding out our trio, Tom McDonald, WHYY's government reporter covering City Hall, contributes to WHYY's NewsWorks website and NewsWorks Tonight. And Tom, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you.
Let me begin with the easy stuff first, and I'll start with Daryl Clark, the new president of Philadelphia City Council. And perhaps, Tom, I'll start with you since you're down there a lot. How would you describe his first 6 months on the job?
He did very well. He was working together to bring coalitions together. Working with six new council members makes a big difference, because it's always said that city council is like herding cats to begin with. But when you have six new people who all have agendas, who all want to make sure that in 4 years they're going to find another four-year term, it's difficult. And yesterday he was presented with almost a life-size gavel.
Is that right?
The gavel was about 3.5, 4 feet long. For wielding the gavel with good aplomb, shall we say.
And who gave him the gavel? Or who?
Dennis O'Brien presented it to him, which was one of the Republican newbies, or the freshman six, whatever you want to call them.
So are we talking about one happy family year?
Saying happy-ish? One happy family with city council, I think, is probably the biggest stretch. You're never going to get 17 people rowing in the same direction.
What do you think, Dave?
Well, yeah, there are always going to be rivalries among members, and you've got six new ones in this council. But they were faced with a really, really challenging set of issues in this spring. And I think Daryl Clark worked really hard to try and build some consensus among them. I mean, you know, the previous president, Ann Verna, was a very nice person, and I think also sought to build consensus, but just simply wasn't very active. Clark is a guy who really kind of grew up in the body. He was a staff to John Street when he was on city council until 1999. He then ran for Street's seat, and after three terms ascended to the presidency. So he kind of grew up understanding how the body works, how you build consensus, and I think he's worked hard to kind of help people to work together.
Would it be fair to say, Holly, he's a kind of a wonky guy? We had him in on the show a couple of months ago.
Yeah, I think so. And I definitely agree with Dave that he was a consensus builder. Another thing that was interesting and sort of surprising is that I think he really tried to work with the administration at first. Although, you know, council didn't end up passing the budget that Mayor Nutter wanted. At first, you know, the council president, I think, really wanted to work with them, wanted to be a good partner, and I think tried to get those votes. And once the consensus changed, he went along with it, and he tried to build consensus for sort of the new momentum.
Interesting. And I do want to talk about this AVI, but just a couple of other, I guess, personnel questions. And Tom, I'll go back to you. Six new members of city council, that's a lot of new members. Did they change the dynamic, the operations at city council?
The freshman class worked with everybody, but not together. They could have been a more potent force if they teamed up as a block, which they didn't. And they could have swayed the whole vote throughout. I mean, Councilman Mark Squilla came up with the let's not do AVI, which was eventually what happened. So he put the bug in everybody's ear. But I think if the six would have joined together and gotten together, they could have formed a wedge through the defense. But they just didn't do it because everybody was looking for their own futures and trying to blaze their own path in this council.
I see you're nodding your head, Holly. You agree with that?
Yeah, and in comparison to the last freshman class, which was Curtis Jones, Maria Quinona Sanchez, and Bill Green, I mean, they really did form a block, I think, at first. One of the first pieces of legislation that the freshmen introduced was a bill that would abolish drop for elected officials. So that was, you know, quite a bomb to drop immediately, and it really made a statement. And I'd see less of that sort of statement legislation coming out of this new council.
What do you see, Dave?
Yeah, I think they each came with their own backgrounds and different perspectives, and it's for most of them been a learning session, learning kind of what the rules are, how to pursue their own. Each has had an area of particular interest that they have pursued. Kenyatta Johnson, who represents the second district, you know, Grays Ferry, parts of South Philadelphia, got into short dumping, that issue. And Mark Squilla, who Tom mentioned, took over the first district, which is a really important district because it includes the eastern part of Center City as well as South Philadelphia, Northern Liberties. The fact that he came from that district meant that he was right in the middle of this big property tax debate, and he sort of took a more visible role there. But in generally, they've sort of been pursuing their own interests and learning the job.
So who wants to describe AVI for us? I'm scanning here between
Dave,
the three.
Dave is the AVI expert.
Everyone's pointing at Dave. Go ahead, Dave. Describe in the most succinct terms what AVI is.
Well, you know, it's when I interview council members about this on tape, I say, I want you to answer this question and not use the term AVI. And they are a little flummoxed by it. Because
that's an impossibility.
We want to kind of understand what's happening. It's what I generally say is what Mayor Nutter wants to do is move the city to a property tax system that's based on real market values. And it really is to correct two problems with our property tax system in the city. One of them is that the assessed values that the city has been working from are out of date and wildly off in many cases. For residential properties in particular, many are very underassessed. Poorer communities, probably a little overassessed. The second problem is that the system for determining the taxes themselves is stupid and convoluted. The city assigns a market value to each property, which is probably pretty wildly wrong, and then for everybody takes a predetermined ratio of 32% of that value, then calls that the assessed value, and then levies a rate upon it. It's ridiculous. It's non-transparent. It's confusing. So what Mayor Nutter is attempting to do with this thing he calls AVI, Actual Value Initiative, is to...
You just said it, by the way.
I did say it, and because it, gets,
so you know,
it gets said. But with this new system, the idea is to update the value so that we have real market values, and that's a massive problem, a challenge of assessing all of these properties. Mm-hmm. Holly has written about that. And then the second thing is to make it a simple system. It says if we're going to levy an annual tax of between 1% and 2% of the value of the property, that's what we're going to call it. We're going to have one value and one tax. The problem has been that when the mayor wanted to do this system, but then the massive reassessment, the actual assigning of real values, isn't finished. And they have to make decisions about budget and taxes in the spring, and the actual values aren't available until the fall. And that really was kind of a fatal flaw to this whole process. And it was only as the debate in council unfolded that we could see, you know, some of the troubling impacts that this might have that you really couldn't evaluate until you had the value.
And I think the best way to describe it is one of the councilmen described it to me this way. It's like going to a car dealer to buy a new car, buying all the options and not knowing the price for another 3 months. And nobody's going to do that, and city council didn't want to do that. So they didn't want to buy a pig in a poke that was going to be turned around on them when the real numbers came in, and the numbers kept changing. The value of all the real estate in the city went down by about $30 billion.
To $80 billion, right?
Right, over a three-month period. Now, council brought in their consultant who had a number, the mayor had his people with a number, and there was never a consensus on that. So how do you base numbers? Plus, the mayor wanted to do what he called recapture value. And because there haven't been assessments for so long, he wanted to make a big windfall for the schools, $94 million, and that's what sent up the red flags.
And I want to pick up on that. But Holly, while we're in the weeds, let's get even deeper. So how does or how was the city attempting to assess property value or a property value? Was it a matter of going out and literally looking at all the properties across the city and figuring this out?
Yeah, they only sent a few dozen property tax assessors out to assess all 600,000 properties in the city. And I actually tagged along with one of them one day. And, you know, I mean, they just marked down information about your property, you know, how many bedrooms likely had.
Standing on the street?
Yeah, how big was it, if it was, you know, if it had any damage to it. They also, you know, they use Zillow, they use property records, deeds, to find out every last detail of your house. It's, they're really nosy. And they actually even contract with a company that flies helicopters overhead to take pictures of properties too, to help assess them. So it's a very thorough process, and they understandably want to get it right, because if they get it wrong, that might kill AVI forever. And, you know, the city has been talking about fixing the property tax system for at least, you know, 6 years back now.
But also, if I may interrupt, it's also quite archaic. They're not using pad computers or notebooks. They're writing things down
on a piece of paper.
Giving them to somebody else to key punch, because the people that are the assessors aren't fast enough typists to key punch the information in.
So how far along in the process does anyone know that they got in evaluating these 600,000 properties?
Well, I think they're almost about done evaluating them for the first time. But then Richie McKeithen, the head of the Office of Property Assessment, he wants to have them go back and check on certain properties to make sure that nothing's changed, because they've been assessing them for, you know, some time now.
Right, right. And but Dave, everybody agrees that the system is outdated, in need of reform, unfair, maybe some people paying much too much, some people paying too little.
Absolutely. And I haven't heard anybody say that we shouldn't go forward with this, but what's interesting about what happened as the debate proceeded was that when council members began to analyze what some of the potential impacts were, some troubling things emerged. One of them, for example, is this. If you look at what's likely to happen to a property when this occurs, whether or not your taxes go up or down, well, I mean, pretty much everybody's property is considered to be, most properties are likely underassessed.
Right.
But whether your taxes go up or down or and by how much depends upon how relatively underassessed you may be in relation to the citywide. And one of the things that was discovered was that business properties, particularly big center city business properties, are already pretty close to those values. And that when you do this conversion, you could very well find that these big commercial properties will get a huge tax cut. Bill Green produced evidence that you might have one property that could get a $2 million tax cut, one big office building. And it could be that residential properties get not a modest increase, but on the whole like a 25% increase. The administration hadn't really taken that into account.
Let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation talking about Philadelphia City Council's final session and AVI. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Jeff Bundy, WHYY's Director of Member Relations. WHYY's 2012 fiscal year ends tomorrow at midnight. This fiscal year has seen the one-year anniversary of Newsworks Tonight and the 25th anniversaries of Fresh Air and Radio Times. These great programs are all made possible because of member support. As we prepare for the next fiscal year and beyond, I hope you'll take a moment to make an end-of-fiscal-year donation before midnight tomorrow at whyy.org. Thanks.
Squash vine borers and flea beetles can take quite a bite out of your produce production. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll reveal the clever tricks two listeners devised to stop these pests. Plus, a tomato blight update and answers to all your growing questions. That's You Bet Your Garden, Saturday morning at 11, right here on WHYY-FM.
The eyes of the soccer world are on Poland and Ukraine for the European Championships, but has fan racism stolen the spotlight?
It is sad that we have to talk about this, you know, because football is all about joy.
Racism in Euro 2012 and what's being done about it, next time on Tell Me More.
this afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with three of my colleagues here, talking about Philadelphia City Council, some of the initiatives that were debated in council, including Mayor Michael Nutter's actual value initiative. We actually described that, I think, or they described it very, very well. They, meaning Holly Otterbein, she is a staff writer for It's Our Money, a project and partnership between the Philadelphia Daily News and WHYY. Tom McDonald, it's WHYY's government reporter covering Philadelphia City Hall, contributes to NewsWorks website and NewsWorks Tonight. Dave Davies, senior reporter for WHYY, writes the off-mic blog at the online site newsworks.org. And we're taking calls. Any questions or comments that you might have, do give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. So picking up where we left off, so City Council, I'll toss this to you, Tom. City Council basically said, we're not going to sign off on AVI. We're going to deal with it, what, in the next fiscal year, the next session?
That is the guarantee in this deal. The deal is that AVI will be addressed next year's budget. One way or the other, no matter what, AVI happens a year from now. And with that will come knowing the numbers before they come up with the word millage, which is the percentage of tax. So knowing the numbers, you can come up with how much money will be brought in by the taxes.
Right.
And that is what they want. They don't want to buy the car without knowing the price and then having to pay the mortgage.
And Dave, you were saying right before the break, looking at who pays what now, chances are, looking at commercial properties, they could enjoy a tax decrease. Residential properties, not all of them, but in some neighborhoods, would pay more. Is that kind of the assessment as it stands today?
Right. I mean, when you get to looking at how this might actually play out, depending upon where the values fall, and again, the unknowns are the exact relationship between anybody's property now and what their real value is going to be once the assessment process is finished. Right. But you could have a situation in which business properties get a huge tax decrease and residential properties as a whole pay a lot more. We might add that that may be because business properties have been relatively overpaying in the mm-hmm. past. But the point is, it's a big shift. Policymakers ought to think about that. You might have big shifts within residential properties. You might find that big downtown office buildings get a big tax break, but a little store on a struggling mom-and-pop store on a neighborhood commercial strip might find a big increase. Right. And I think what council members decided is, we're not sure what to do about all of these disparate impacts, but we want to at least know what they might be so that we can think about some policy alternatives. And I'll just add, Marty, that, you know, you and I have sat at this table and talked about council for a lot of years, and I think this is one of those cases where I am inspired to witness the value of the legislative process, because what happened here was the administration, the Nutter people, came in with arguably smart and well thought out plan. I mean, what they suggested was logically coherent. It had a good policy goal. It made sense in a lot of ways, but nobody can think of everything. And when you have hearings at which all of the interest parties have time to look at a proposal, kick the tires, try it on their own way, you find there are things you haven't thought of. There are impacts that you may not have considered. And in the end, better policy often results. And I think this is one of those cases where the relatively thorough process that City Council goes through in vetting its legislation, much more, and I've made this point before, than the state legislature, in some ways even than Congress, I think gives those 18 people in City Hall a better look at what they're doing. Now, they still have to figure out what the best approach is and summon the courage and gumption to do it, and that's not going to be easy next year. But I think this is a case where more eyes on the information gave us better insight.
Well, go ahead, Holly.
Another disparate impact is on residential, or could be on residential. According to council's advisor or consultant, many of the tax increases that people could get could be really huge, like thousands of dollars, go up by 100-200%. Whereas, according to some council members and also some economists, the decreases that you would see would be much lower. They would be maybe $50 or $100. And so I think that makes it a much tougher political sell, too, because, the people who have been overpaying, and they have been overpaying, so they should, pay more.
Right.
But they're going to get these you know, small decreases, and so I think that makes it tougher.
Particularly for the lower end commercial, I mean residential properties, right? A lot of them will get a small decrease.
And this, like all governments, they're dependent on property taxes to pay for a whole host of services.
Yeah, I mean, including the school district.
Exactly. In fact, Tom, you had mentioned the school district. Michael Nutter, the School Reform Commission, wanted $94 million to help defray some of their costs. They didn't get it.
And that was one of the things that Dave brought up. The Nutter administration had everything going in the right direction. It was a public relations dream team. They came up with, we won't call it tax increase, we'll call it recapturing value. And the mayor stayed with that recapturing value word all the way through last week. Never used the T word. We just need to recapture value because we haven't had a full assessment for so long. And the other part of this with the real estate abatement for all the new construction, if you look in a lot of the up-and-coming neighborhoods in the city, they were given 10-year real estate tax abatements for totally renovated or new construction. Those abatements are coming due. So when you look at this, a lot of these people who bought new homes 9 years ago are now going to be facing a big jump. And with the new assessments, Jim Kenney said that it could be up to $6,000 or $7,000 in taxes more than what they're paying right now.
Sticker shock.
Major sticker shock. And you've got to figure out a way to do that. So they're coming up with ways to smooth it, bring it in slowly. You know, and that's part of what couldn't come together in such a rush.
And Dave, as you said, or as all of you have said, and I think even people in city council, probably the Nutter administration as well, is that the current system is outdated and does need reform. I mean, when was the last time the city did something like this, looking at literally looking, as Holly was describing, at properties and trying to figure out what their value was?
Well, they say the last citywide assessment was 2004. I mean, there was an earlier attempt a few years back to do this, to move to this actual value assessment system. And they came up with new, presumably more accurate values and presented them in, I think it was 2009. The Inquirer
which started one of the biggest homeowner backlashes you have ever seen.
Yeah, I think the Inquirer looked at the data and found that in hundreds of properties they were off. Now, the people who did it said, look, out of a 500,000 properties, there will be some mistakes. In fact, they did a pretty good job. One of the things that happens when you were trying to assess that many properties, I think that most people, they call this mass assessment. And I don't know that when this is done generally, that they try and look at every property. They try and look at an area, look at comparable sales over a period of time, and then plug in the data they have on the size of the lot and the number of floors and that kind of thing, and then come up with values which they hope are more or less right. This is unusual in that I think they actually intend to at least take an exterior look at every single property.
And you observe that, Holly.
Yeah, and that's incredibly different. I mean, most of the time cities are assessing homes and businesses maybe every year, every couple of years. I mean, Richie McKeithen, head of the Office of Property Assessment, came from D.C., and he actually said to me, you know, most other places, property taxes don't make the news, like, every week. This is really weird. Assessments should be, like, this sort of sterile, boring subject, you know, in a perfect world.
But not in Philadelphia. No. But is there a certain dollar amount that they're looking to raise? They just have to sort of figure out how to get the properties lined up so that they can get that money?
Are you talking about cooking the books?
No. Sort of. I mean, you need this amount, and then you work your way backwards, right?
Right. It's
I don't know. Is that cooking the book?
No, that's right. I mean, that's a critical point, Marty, and Tom made this point earlier. I think when you do this, if you want people to believe that you're just trying to make the system better, you really want to make it revenue neutral. You tell taxpayers, we're not going to collect any more than we did last year. And then what you do is you do those values, and, yeah, you try and hit that revenue target, and you're right. You set the rates so that you hit that revenue target, and some people's taxes will rise and others will fall. But overall, you're not trying to get more revenue from the public as a whole. And as Tom says, in this case, the mayor's proposal did ask for another $94 million. Now, they have an explanation for that, which if you want another 2 minutes in the weeds, I can give you.
We're so in the weeds now.
But, I mean, the fact is that I think a lot of people felt that simple fact undermined confidence in the effort.
But even though I think that move was unpopular in the press and among residents, I think it actually was somewhat of a smart move for Nutter among council members, because by, you know, tying AVI, which is a very politically treacherous thing, with raising more money for the schools, I think he actually got some more people on board who just wanted to give more money to the school district. That was their main priority, and they were willing to do it that way. Now, of course, it didn't pan out. He didn't get what he wanted, but I think that helped him get close.
I think that's right. And in a way, if you're going to do two politically unpopular things, maybe you're better off combining them and calling it one thing.
They but got about half, a little less than half of what they were looking for, right, Tom?
Right. And this is the third year the mayor has tried something and not succeeded. I mean, we had soda tax, then we had soda tax two. And now we've had AVI, all designed to bring more money in, all failed, which, you know, hurts the Nutter administration locally, but the mayor seems to be untouched in the national spotlight.
Yeah, in fact, isn't he head of the mayor's
Conference of Mayors?
Conference of Mayors. Right, just got the job. Well, we are talking about Philadelphia city government, its mayor, with three people with affiliations here at WHYY. Dave Davies, senior reporter for WHYY, Tom McDonald, WHYY's government reporter, and Holly Otterbein, staff writer for It's Our Money, and that's a project between WHYY and the Philadelphia Daily News. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me see what Paul from Center City has to say. And Paul, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Basically, my point is that the real estate tax is a very weak foundation to structure the city enterprise on. The city needs more money because of rising costs, and real asset values can't be supported by a population that's 40% at or below the poverty level, and by a population whose real household income has been falling nationwide since about 1969. It's a very weak basis to structure the city's future on. The city has ways to raise money value-based.
Give us one.
And restructure itself.
Well, what would be one of those ways, Paul?
Well, right now, for instance, the city wants to dump the gas company, and the gas company has ways of being structured that can actually produce value for the general economy. I don't want to go into all the details of an enterprise strategy, but the gas company has ways of earning money.
Okay.
There are also corridors within the city that are available to the city to develop toll systems that can divide for new corridors in the city. Houston, for instance, has 100 miles of toll roads.
Toll roads.
About $125 million a year.
Well,
from its toll system.
Let me just stop you there because, I'll toss this to you, Tom. I mean, the city is there are certain things that the legislature would not allow the city to do. Doesn't that, in a sense, hamper some of the options before?
Yeah, city? You're not going to be able to put a tax on the Schuylkill Expressway or 95.
Right.
I mean,
no,
but
this is not the existing roadways. I'm talking about new facilities.
Well, but you need money to build new facilities, and as we're talking about, the city's struggling to find that money. Tom?
Right. The council president has also said that come fall he's going to come up with new revenue-generating ideas, that he is working on some now, and he wants to bring more money for the schools and the city, more to the schools who are saying they need more money. And that will happen, he says, when they return from their summer recess of sessions in the fall.
But Holly, just picking up what Paul said, I mean, Philadelphia is a city with a large poor population compared to other large cities. I believe the among the top 10 cities with the largest poor population.
Yeah, I mean, that is definitely true, and that's part of what I was talking about earlier. That's why, actually, if we move to AVI, probably people who have been overpaying are going to see, small decreases, whereas people who have been underpaying are going to see huge increases. And that's because there are many more low-income households than middle and higher income.
But what you're saying is that they're probably, at least according to a new system, they're probably paying too much or have been paying too much.
Yeah, I mean, the neighborhoods that economists have tagged as overpaying include, you know, many low-income neighborhoods and middle-income neighborhoods, Germantown, Nicetown, Kinsessing, Cobbs Creek. So, yeah.
And doesn't the city government or city council, Dave, I mean, they are, in a sense, they have to there are limitations to what they can do, and the legislature can limit what they can do in terms of raising taxes, raising money?
Yeah, there are some limitations, but yeah, I mean, the bigger one is the one that Paul alluded to. I mean, we are a big, aging, poor city, and funding services in this kind of place isn't easy. He does raise an interesting question of considering tax policy generally speaking. And I think Bill Green introduced a resolution saying that before we come back to this full value thing next year, we ought to take a good hard look at it. And one of the interesting things about that is that twice within the last 10 years or 15 years, there have been tax reform commissions formed by two different mayors to study our tax structure and make suggestions about what should we do differently. And both of them concluded that we are too dependent upon wage and business taxes and, in fact, should get more, relatively speaking, from property taxes. I think the logic was that they're the fixed assets less inclined to move, whereas when you tax businesses and wage earners, they have options to leave. Now, I don't know whether that's the smartest policy or not. I do know that that property taxes are generally not considered as high here as they are in a lot of places, particularly in New Jersey, because the city does rely on these other kinds of they have a sales tax and a wage tax and a business tax. We're less dependent on the property tax than other places. But as we make this change, if we in fact begin to get more income from the property tax, maybe it's time. Because it has been raised now. This will be the third year in a row that we've had an actual increase in property taxes. And at some point, maybe you have to stop and look at the mix again.
Yeah. Hey, you had a piece this morning, Tom, about the wage tax.
Yeah, and they're trying – right now there was a David Cohen bill that was passed in 2004 and has been pushed off year to year to year for those at the lowest income level to receive a tax rebate.
That's the late Councilman David Cohen.
Yes, exactly.
As opposed
Thank
to the Comcast David Cohen.
Yes.
And unfortunately, it's the one thing that just keeps getting pushed off, and now it's been repealed pending the mayor's signature. And when you look at this, it's something that Bill Greenlee, who was the aide to the late councilman, said there has to be across-the-board tax cuts as opposed to just targeted tax cuts on the low-income people in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. But can the city afford tax cuts in this?
Well, there's plans for modest tax cuts in the out years of this five-year plan. It's a sign as opposed to major tax cuts.
Right. Well, don't forget, I mean, the city had 15 years of tax cuts or more than from starting in 1995 and going through, I guess, well, not quite.
This is the wage.
The wage tax. And they were all a little deli-thin slice every year. But it did add up to some real tax relief. And it's one of the more discouraging things of what we've seen since the 2008 recession is the inability to sustain that.
Yeah, indeed. Well, let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation and our callers. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. We are, in a sense, deconstructing some of the issues that City Council and Mayor Michael Nutter have been dealing with over the last 6 months and beyond. Our guests are Tom McDonald, WHYY's government reporter covering City Hall, Dave Davies, senior reporter for WHYY, Holly Otterbein, staff writer for It's Our Money, and a couple open lines at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
I'm Jesse Thorne. Elvis Mitchell is an august radio host and film critic, a class act, a brilliant public intellectual, but he has an important role in my life, and that is introducing me to the movie Pootie Tang.
I think I'm the only English-speaking critic in North America to be quoted on the Pootie Tang home video box.
Elvis Mitchell on the next Bullseye from PRI.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
After struggling with personal demons and being a mediocre pitcher for years, R.A. Dickey has mastered baseball's wackiest pitch, the knuckleball. He's now a dominating presence on the mound with an 11-1 record. On the next Fresh Air, Dickey tells us about dealing with child sexual abuse and turning his life around. His new memoir is Wherever I Wind Up. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I I'm Deborah Becker. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. We'll have the fallout from the Supreme Court decision on President Obama's health care reform law. Also, as the violence escalates in Syria, neighboring Turkey arms its border. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture, here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking about something you can't talk about on the radio, taxes, and specifically Mayor Michael Nutter's Actual Value Initiative. And again, our guests are Holly Otterbein, Tom McDonald, and Dave Davies. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Let me get Barbara from, looks like Fairmount, to join our conversation. And Barbara, go ahead, you're on the air.
Yes, I've been following the AVI initiative for a while, and I have a concern. I bought my house in 1996 in Fairmount for a price that I could afford based on my salary. My taxes have gone up over the years, and now the 10% 1 year, the 3.8 the next year. I forget which one was permanent or not permanent. And now with this, I bought my house not as an investment, but to live there.
Right.
I work for the city. I haven't had a raise in 5 years. Who knows what's going to happen? We're under our old contract. We're held hostage by having to live in the city. The police can leave the city, the firemen, but if I want to keep my job, I can't. So this creates a lot of anxiety. Sure, if I sell my house, I suppose I could make a big profit. But where else would I go in the city to a safe neighborhood like Fairmount that I would want to live for the price I could afford based on my salary? Again, I bought the house based on what I could afford.
No, I understand.
And it's a little frightening. It causes anxiety.
Well,
and I don't know.
I hear you. Let me just ask you a question. How much do you pay in taxes now, property taxes?
$2,300 a year. I started off at $1,600 in 1996.
And now you pay $2,300.
$2,300. Okay. So with the AVI initiative, I was reading the formula that I think they can't go more than three times the value of your house. And also I put in the, I think the request for
a homestead exemption, right?
Yeah. A homestead exemption. Right. So I'm just wondering, what exactly would they go up to then?
Yeah.
Thanks, Barbara. What do you think your house might be worth? Do you know?
In that neighborhood, it all depends. I mean, my house, I have a pink tile bathroom with black tiles. It's not modern.
No.
I
know
that
bathroom.
Shag carpet.
Yeah,
yes,
really.
God forbid. No, it does have wood floors, but somewhere between $250,000 and $300,000, supposedly.
Okay.
I don't think I would be on the high end. My bathroom and kitchen aren't remodeled.
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah.
Other issues.
Just round numbers. Looking at this, if you're paying $2,300 now, and that's what your property would go with, I think you're going to be okay. I don't think you're going to get a big whack. I mean, there is this interesting question that Barbara raised. You know, a house, the notion of property taxes is a lot of our taxes are based on spending or income, some indication that you either can afford to buy something or are making money. But property taxes are, we're going to make you pay 1-2% of the value of this thing that you own, which you don't get any income from. I mean, Barbara pays, you know, maintenance expenses and more expenses and mortgage and utilities. And it's sort of in a way, there's a question about how much you want to tax of something that you don't get any income from.
Well,
but we all do it.
Indeed. Yeah, go ahead, Holly.
And depending on when you bought your house, Barbara, I'm not sure when you said you did, but if it was 5-10 years ago, I mean, you probably had absolutely no idea that this was coming.
Right.
So your realtor said, this is how much taxes are, and you assumed that they were going to probably stay that way, understandably.
Although I have to say, anyone living in New Jersey would be salivating knowing that she's paying $2,300 in property taxes for a house worth $250,000. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't be anxious, Barbara, but in terms of neighborhoods.
But again, Marty, that Jersey resident isn't paying a 4% wage tax like Barbara.
Gotcha.
And that's the big thing. The overall tax burden here is heavy.
Right. Barbara, thanks for calling into Radio Times. I appreciate we got a full bank of calls here at 1-888-477-9499. Tom, let me go back to you, and let's just talk about some of the people that are part of this negotiation. We've got Bill Green, we've got Kinney, we've got the mayor, of course. How do these personalities play out in city council,
Well, I can tell you a story during the negotiations. There are some names being thrown around as Kenny and Green running for mayor in a few years. And at one point, Green said to reporters, watch when I walk over to this conversation how Jim Kenney will walk away. He walked over to the conversation, Jim Kenney walked away. I mean, it's the battle lines are slowly personal, not necessarily more political, but the battle lines are slowly being drawn. People are trying to decide whether they're going to run, when they have to resign, because in Philadelphia, if you want to run for another office, you have to resign your current office. That puts a lot of people who are currently office holders into a position where, am I going to run? Mayor Michael Nutter stepped down when he wanted to run a year early than when he really had to run, you know, and it's something people are thinking about. There's a lot of people up on the fourth floor of City Hall where City Council is thinking about what their next move is.
Holly, let me ask you something about the money that comes from Harrisburg, and it looks like the general assistance money, which is about $200 a month, but a fair number of people in Philadelphia get that money. If that's on the chopping block, what kind of impact do you think it'll have on the city?
I mean, I think it could have a devastating...
These are really poor people.
Yes. Recovering drug addicts, victims of domestic violence, basically people in the most vulnerable situation in the world. And, I think it could have a devastating effect. At the same time, homeless funding is also going down. And so if you take away that general assistance and that's the only income that people have, I think that you could see homeless numbers rising in addition to, at the same time, us having fewer services for the homeless.
So maybe more people on the street.
Yeah. And just a note, I know that, of course, the general assistance funding is hundreds of millions of dollars. The lawmakers in the state have actually budgeted out an increase for themselves, a pay increase at the same time as cutting things like general assistance. And of course, it's only a couple million, so there's no way that it could go to cover things like GA. But
right.
It's surprising they did this in an election year anyway.
I did not know that. You had a piece, actually, and I do want to get back to our callers, but Holly, I'll go back to you, a piece about the Waterworks restaurant and its utility bills. Is there a short version of that story?
I think so. I don't know if I'm going to do as good of a job as Dave with AVI. But Waterworks Restaurant is located in a city-owned building, and it shares the property with the city. And so I found that they have not been paying their utilities for several years. And the owner of Waterworks says pretty plainly that I never got a bill, and if I had, I absolutely would have paid. And the city says that, they had various problems just billing the restaurant because of the shared nature of the property. So this added up to thousands and thousands of dollars that the taxpayers have been on the hook for.
Does this tell us anything, Dave, beyond the Waterworks restaurant and city government?
Well, I think it's one of those little insights into ways in which government is inefficient. And, it's popular to condemn the government, and I think too much of it goes on. A lot of important things get done by government, and most government employees try and do a good job. But the fact is that this could go on for years, and just nobody noticed that these utilities were being provided for free. It's troubling.
Well, and then I found that another business owned by the same man who owns Waterworks Restaurant. Michael Carlutzis, that was formerly in Lloyd Hall, another city-owned building, was also not paying for its utilities. And now the city says that the current business that's inside Lloyd Hall is working to get billed for their utilities. But again, it makes you wonder how many other buildings are like that out there.
Let me get, looks like Tom from Haverford to join our conversation. And Tom, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
One thing that hasn't been mentioned is the Philadelphia Parking Authority. And I'm curious what percentage they contribute to the budget, because they're a 24-hour operation. They're very aggressive, and they're very regressive, in my opinion, because they take advantage of people who can't afford to rent parking places.
It's an easy question to answer. I mean, the money is not contributed to the city budget per se, but the school district, because the Parking Authority is a quasi-governmental agency that is overseen by the state. So that money goes into the school district budget as opposed to the city budget.
Oh, interesting. Let me get, looks like Matt from Bella Vista to join our conversation. And Matt, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
And I guess I apologize in advance. I'm on a cell phone. Sorry about that. My question is with regards to the school district. I hear a lot about taxes, and I actually don't mind paying taxes. I feel like I get a pretty decent bang for the buck out of them. I'm a relatively new resident of Philadelphia in my late 20s, and I feel like, at least amongst my peers, at least people in the city in their late 20s, come here for graduate school because Philadelphia has a number of schools to go to and such, and then later on in their early 30s when they have kids, they make a decision to stay or leave, and one of the reasons why I feel people leave is because they say, I don't want to send my kids to public school here, and I can't afford private school here. And so I guess my question is are there any significant policy changes that aren't related to getting the school district's fiscal house in order that will couple the tax raising discussion to supply more revenue to the school district to make those taxpayers that feel like they're going to now be contributing more money to the school district to make them feel like they're getting sort of a better bang for their better bang for their buck, so to speak?
Yeah, no, I believe I understand what you're saying, and certainly you're not alone, Matt. This is, I think, a choice that others like yourself are have considered over the years. Dave, can I toss that first to you?
Yeah, I've been covering the city for a long, long time, and how to provide quality education to everybody who shows up at Philadelphia Public Schools in a city like this, which is so relatively poor and in which the middle class has mostly abandoned the public school system to private schools, the suburbs, or parochial schools. How to solve that problem is one of the biggest single challenges of local government, and we've seen, highly touted school superintendents come one after the other and fail. And I think one of the things that we saw in the tax debate this spring was council members' reluctance to simply put more money into that enterprise. The $20 million that they did in city property taxes this year, they actually didn't provide directly to the school district. They maintained some control over it. But I just think that a lot of people are discouraged at the history here, and I wish I had something more encouraging to say.
Yeah, Holly?
You know, I would actually say, I understand your point that, not only do the fiscal problems need to be fixed, but also the actual academic problems. But I commend the School Reform Commission for just dealing with the fiscal issues for right now. They were actually considering a huge revamping of the schools that would have broken up the district into achievement networks, which were groups of schools run by nonprofits. And they decided not to, and part of it was because of the reaction that they got from the public, and the public really felt like they just didn't have enough time to look at this and debate it and really truly consider it in a way that mattered, and that, they couldn't possibly do it at the same time that they were also commenting on the budget. So, they're going to look at it again in the next year, and I think that was the right decision for now.
And we should add that the School Reform Commission is looking at two, I guess, finalists for superintendent.
That is correct. Right now they're looking for two finalists, but they also have a big deficit, and they're going to have to borrow money to cover that operating deficit, and that's going to be difficult. That's a story that's going to play out in the months and weeks ahead because people are going to look at this, and you're borrowing money just to equalize your budget, and you've still got further down the line bigger deficits coming.
Well, and so yesterday, Tom, Philadelphia City Council passed a $3.6 billion budget. Does the mayor have to sign off on that?
He does have to sign off on that.
Is there any question about what he will or won't do?
Well, I would never put words in the mayor's mouth or a pen in the mayor's hand, and the mayor yesterday would not confirm that he would sign it, but with 48 hours before you can't spend any money, I think, Dave, you and I have got enough time to say it's pretty fair.
Yeah, it's funny. I actually had a conversation with the city's finance director, Rob Dubo, yesterday when we were talking about what had happened in ABI. And I asked him about whether, in retrospect, it was the wrong thing to do to try and get council to enact this without having the assessments done. He said, we're not looking back right now. We want to look forward, and we're looking forward to getting this done next year. That says to me they're resigned to signing this.
Interesting. Yeah. And I guess looking ahead to next year, the next session then, Holly, so the AVI – Council will revisit this and more information about all these assessments and that's the big challenge for next year?
Yeah, I mean, like Tom said, it's actually a guarantee as part of this deal that they will address ABI somehow next year. It'll be interesting to see if the assessments come out in this fall, which was the original plan by the Nutter administration. I think that that would actually give a lot of time for critics to sort of foment their arguments if they come out in the fall and then the budget debate is in the spring. So this is not confirming it, but I wouldn't be surprised if they were delayed a little bit.
Oh, yeah, it may be they'll find that the only thing worse than a lack of information in this case is actually getting the information.
But people should have this information.
No doubt.
This is America.
You need to make informed choices. But I mean, it is going to mean that the places that do get big increases will have those big, ugly numbers right in their faces.
Yeah. But this is reality, right, Tom?
And remember, the numbers that they receive in the fall, if the state approves this, will not be able to be appealed for this year's taxes.
Okay.
So if your number's off and you can see that your number's off, it's still not usable until a year from July 1st.
Well, on that note, my thanks to all three of you for joining us today on Radio Times. The voice you just heard, Tom McDonald, WHYY's government reporter. Also with us, Dave Davies, senior reporter for WHYY. Tom, of course, at WHYY as well. You can read and hear them on Newsworks and newsworks.org and Newsworks Tonight. And Holly Otterbein, staff writer for It's Our Money. And that's a partnership between the Philadelphia Daily News and WHYY. My thanks to all three of our guests for joining us as we talked about taxes today on Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out more about this program, everything from podcasts to Facebook, email, Twitter, and the archives. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Bilder. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us. And if you